On Wednesday, September 26, 2018, the League of Women Voters, Bozeman Business and Professional Women, and the Bozeman Public Library co-sponsored a forum on the ballot initiatives that we will find on the November ballot. Guest speakers were invited to present viewpoints supporting and opposing each of the initiatives, and then the crowd was invited to ask questions. This is the second half of the forum, which discussed I-185, which extends Medicaid expansion and increases tobacco taxes to fund health programs, and I-186, which restricts new hard rock mining permits, including water quality requirements for restoration plans.
Okay, tobacco tax, I-185.
Great, thank you. My name is Stacey Anderson. I'm the policy director for the Montana Primary Care Association. We represent community health centers from across the state, including Community Health Partners here in Bozeman. I've been doing this work for 20 years, so I work in healthcare. What does I-185 do? It is indeed a tobacco tax initiative. It increases the tax on cigarettes, $2 a pack, and provides a parallel increase for all other tobacco products. It starts taxing e-cigarettes and vaping for the first time. So those are the products that our kids are using. It provides funding for certain programs, suicide prevention for veterans, the Health Act, which you know is Medicaid expansion, tobacco prevention and cessation programs, long-term care services to help seniors and disabled stay in their home, and prescription drug coverage for low-income seniors. Why do we want to tax tobacco? It is one of the best policy efforts to reduce tobacco use in any state. Tobacco-related diseases kill 1,600 people in Montana a year. 28.4% of all cancer-related deaths in Montana are due to tobacco. It costs Montana about $440 million a year in health care costs that we all pay. That's about $800 a year per Montana taxpayer. And smoking costs Montana businesses $369 million lost productivity every year. A lot comes up about Medicaid expansion. What does Medicaid expansion do for Montana? It's infused more than $500 million a year into our economy, including 5,000 new jobs. It's reduced state spending by more than $40 million to date by transitioning people from traditional Medicaid, which we've always paid for, into the expansion population because we're able to get a better federal match for that. We have a healthier workforce. We have reduced medical debt, reduced bankruptcies, and improved credit scores for our working families. Who opposes I-185? You would think no one, but indeed they are spending 8-1 last month alone, $8 million on their side, $1 million on our side, and they have two big funders, Altria, that's Philip Morris, and Reynolds American. So the two big tobacco companies are the ones funding all of the ads that you're seeing on TV, on radio, in your mailbox, and they can't send someone to Bozeman. So what are they talking about? They're not talking about tobacco tax. They're not talking about tobacco effects on our lives. They're not talking about the cost to our healthcare system from tobacco. They're talking about the things that make people scared. Unfunded mandates, or making promises to veterans that we can't follow through with, which is not true. I'm happy to answer that question. They're not talking about what this does. And it reduces tobacco. We're expecting like 9,600 Montanans would stop using tobacco every year, including about 28% of kids would not start smoking to begin with, let alone chew, e-cigs, and vaping. So that's the basics on I-185, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Good. Kelly,
I'll sit down. I will.
Kelly. Kelly's going to speak to how she tried to get a person to speak to the con. However, I have just found somebody who will speak to the con.
Oh, no.
So.
Well, why don't we bring him up?
Okay.
Hello! Did I tell you I'm Dr. Olszewski, an orthopedic surgeon? I'm also on Children, Family, Health, and Human Services. I'm also on Senate Finance and Claims. So, Stacy does a great job, and I agree with her. You know what? We need to stop smoking completely. It's a health hazard. It's something that has to go away. And whatever it takes is okay by me. Here's the rub. I-185 is a wolf in sheep's clothing. She talked to you about the wolves or the sheep's clothing. Let's stop smoking. Let's improve health. What she didn't tell you is that underneath there is that Medicaid expansion was created in 2015 with a sunset. That means if nothing happens, Medicaid expansion goes away after the 2019 session. Why was it created? Why was it in the House? It was created so that we as a legislature can go, okay, how did it work? Can we make it better? How much is it costing? Can we afford it? All right? This initiative, the wolf underneath, is it removes the sunset. And why does that happen? And it's gone. We won't have the ability to negotiate with the Democratic governor about trying to make this better, whether you agree or disagree about work requirements for able-bodied single adults, all right? Or whether there should be a different level of where we should pay for Medicaid expansion. Because Medicaid expansion, you get full dental, full vision, you get full medical, all right? You get it. You get it. Okay, that's fine. But did you know if you're a Hutterite, they used to pay me cash. Now they come with Medicaid. Why is that? Because there's no assets testing on Medicaid expansion. I have patients that come from Texas, they move to Flathead, they move into a hotel, they get a job, usually at the same hotel, so they can get one pay stub that says that they're making $9 an hour. They go get Medicaid expansion, they get their knees replaced by me, their shoulder replaced, they get their tummy tucked, and then they go back to where they live in Texas with their home and with their cars, because there's no asset testing. We need to fix that. We need to fix it. We shouldn't have to pay for people who know how to game the system. Medicaid expansion has done a great job. And who has it done a great job for? Our hospitals. So what is Stacey, she told you about Altria. There's only two groups who put a lot of money into the system. You've got the hospitals who are funding this because they're making almost $1 billion a year off of Medicaid expansion. And then you got the tobacco company who's putting all their money aside. How many people who are grassroots put in more than $100? Two people. It's too complex. Don't cut us off at the knees in the legislature. We need to figure out both of these issues. Thank you.
We love it. There's no enthusiasm whatsoever. All right, now we're all going to be polite, right? That's the House rules. Yes, ma'am.
Now, is it true that it 185 tops out on veterans at 4 million?
Is it true that
I-185 caps things at 4%. So whatever that is as the money, it caps it at 4%. You know what we've done again? It's the wolves and sheep's coat. They brought in a lot of fuzzy things. These are all good things. I mean, I fight for veterans. I'm a veteran. I fight for veterans' issues, especially for suicide, mental health, and these issues to make sure they get care. It's noble, but it's the sheep's clothing.
Stacey?
So, Senator Olszewski, how much money did the legislature appropriate in 2017 for suicide prevention for veterans?
In 2017, we had $1 million appropriated for suicide prevention awareness for veterans, for Native Americans, and for our youth. That money was then passed out as grants by the governor's office. How much money went to veterans? I do not know.
So only 500,000 over the 2 years of the biennium are eligible for veteran services. The rest are school-based or tribal. And I-185 is a guaranteed $2 million additional every year for veteran suicide. The legislature has not filled that gap. Number one suicide death for veterans in the country is in Montana. And they gave $250,000 a year last year. I-185 covers a gap that isn't there.
Is the gentleman...
What happens if this unfunded portion, or what we're hearing all the ads, an unfunded mandate, the amount that you're putting to veterans, the amount that you're, whatever, these other programs, if your program works as planned and people, 100% of the people quit smoking, you've got no revenue. How do you propose to pay for the extended Medicare and various other programs if your plan works to reduce smoking?
Well, much to our dismay, no tobacco tax reduces to zero, right? So forecasting out budget-wise, we see funding for tobacco tax well into the 2023. $60 million is what is estimated for 2020, the cost of Medicaid expansion. We already know we save $40 million by transitioning people who are already on Medicaid into expansion population. That leaves a gap of $20 million. This guarantees $26 million, so we actually have a cushion there. This isn't even taking into account the $500 million every year coming into Montana that goes into incomes, that goes into services, and all of those are taxable. And that's another, I think, $38 million. So this program pays for itself. It creates jobs, it helps people's lives, and it does reduce taxes. I mean, not reduce taxes, but values.
Maybe.
Not maybe.
No, because here's a, yes, we had a 40-some million dollar savings when the federal government paid 100% of Medicaid expansion. But for every year, it's been dropping by 2.5%. So for the biennium of 19 and 20, our state had to come up with, we appropriated $86 million, which we didn't have to pay the biennium before, for Medicaid expansion. We had to come up with $86 million this biennium, which we never had before. And you know what? There's a $20 million overrun on this biennium already. Next biennium, for 21-22, we're gonna have to come up with $190 million per biennium for Medicaid expansion. That's the unfunded mandate. We will not, the $40 million we saved in the first 2 years, we've already chopped out, we've already spent $20 million of it fixing this unfunded mandate. Medicaid expansion is a statutory fund. To explain that, that's a vacuum and a blank check together on the general fund going.
I'm concerned about who pays this bill. My impression is that the people that smoke are generally the lowest income people in the community. And so we're asking the poorest people to pay more than their share of this community endeavor. And that bothers me a whole bunch.
And I understand that. I mean, there's no way to get around the fact that Big Tobacco has targeted our lowest income communities for generations. We have generations of families that are addicted to tobacco because Big Tobacco knows that they can go after those communities. It's an affordable way to get a reward. It's an affordable luxury, right? They also bear the greatest burden for the use of tobacco in their families. The biggest beneficiaries from a tobacco tax in the long run are the folks who pay the tax, who are in the low income. 34% of tobacco users are on Medicaid, and they have health care coverage to cover their long-term costs associated with that tobacco use.
Do you want to speak to that?
I agree completely with Stacy on that issue.
Yes, ma'am.
So you have said the initiative will remove the sunset for Medicaid expansion?
Louder.
Yes, the initiative 185 removes the sunset on Medicaid expansion that was put in place through the HELP Act when Medicaid expansion was put into law by the state legislature and the governor in 2015.
Okay, you seem to be equating that with no ability then to change Medicare expansion. Is that also true? If it's sunsetted, you can't make any adjustments or changes to Medicare expansion?
Are you saying that I'm saying that with the sunset removed, it removes a very important tool that we have to be able to talk with the governor who's running for president.
Stacy?
I think you hit the nail on the head, right? This is a statutory initiative. It is not a constitutional initiative. We have statutory initiatives all the time that the legislature goes in a month or two later and starts tinkering with the policy piece. There's actually on page 8 of what you'll get in your ballot description, it really talks about how in this initiative we encourage the legislature to investigate enhancements to the HELP Act, and it lists a number of them that we encourage that to occur. This lifting the sunset takes away the big crux about whether we're even going to continue the program, and we can focus on the policy improvements.
You know, a citizens initiative. As a legislator, I will tell you that we respect the fact that the power of the people for you to make a decision, and we place a citizen's initiative above what we do in the legislature. And a classic is to look at medicinal marijuana. I don't like it, but I'm dealing with it, and I'm working on your behalf because you passed it twice. Who doesn't respect your ability to do a citizen's initiative? The executive branch and the judicial branch. But we, as in the legislative branch, will always fight and believe that if you bring us something through an initiative and you pass it, we're going to follow because it's the people who've told us what they want.
Hey. Yes, ma'am.
So Medicaid expansion, how many Montana citizens are covered by Medicaid expansion? And what is your plan to make sure those, I mean, I know there's abuse, but I believe it's a small number, percentage of people that abuse the system. So how are we going to take care of those citizens if we don't have Medicaid expansion?
I hope your assumption is correct. I'd like to find some way to help to make sure. I should think that the Hutterites should give us half off on their chickens when they come into the farmer's market. All right? But here's the thing.
But I don't think Hutterites live in high alcohol.
They buy ranches for cash. All right? They buy trucks for cash.
All right.
So, but here's the fact. You know, in this situation, it's a work in progress. In 2015, I put together legislation that created a pool of money, just like in the state of Idaho, for those people that didn't have insurance. If they were hit by a crisis situation, heart attack, cancer, trauma, that what would happen is they would be topped off at $10,000, and the hospitals would be able to go to this trauma fund or this acute care fund, and they'd be able to bring their bills to it. The fiscal note for that was $8 million.
Okay, Stacy.
So I think you're right. We're looking for a red herring if we're saying that the increase in Medicaid expansion coverage from 21,000 people covered, adults covered in 2015, to almost 97,000 covered now. I mean, this shows the depth of poverty in the state to me, not that people are trying to game the system. Does it happen? Sure. The Department of Revenue and the Governor's Office they went in and looked at some of these folks and pulled their records, and they found one person who's gaming the system, and they haven't cleared off the records. Other issues like the assets tests or strengthening the HealthLink program, I-185 has asked the legislature to look at those pieces.
Yes.
Yeah, point of information. What percentage of the Medicaid spending in Montana goes to the elderly population in assisted living and nursing homes?
Great question. All right, traditional Medicaid, because Medicaid traditionally was designed to help the most elderly, the young, single parent mothers that have young children, and the developmentally disabled. That's traditional Medicaid. And we all as people said, this is a common good, they're in a tough situation, we are going to help them. All right, that was $1.2 billion is what we have for the biennium for Medicaid. Okay, that's the number that we have. Here's the problem. During this time of cuts, we robbed Peter to pay Paul. Medicaid expansion was a statutory fund. They received no cuts. All the cuts that occurred this last year was against our elderly, assisted living, areas for aging, our developmentally disabled. We collapsed Helena Industries. We've destroyed case management for our developmentally disabled. Because why? Because they are an appropriated position, they're now statutory funds.
And if we had passed the tobacco tax initiative, which is exactly what you're seeing here today, we would have raised $74 million this year and not had those cuts, right? Passed the Senate, failed in the House. So I forgot the question, medically needy, frail, elderly. They're not part of the Medicaid expansion population. I'm sorry I didn't pull that data. But that's there's different categories of who we have to cover under Medicaid if the state takes Medicaid funding. And age blind disabled is one of those populations. And I might have some statistics on who's covered by that, but I don't know how much the expenditure is. But it's actually quite significant. Able-bodied adults and children are the least expensive categories to cover. And then when you get into age blind disabled categories and those in nursing homes, that really eats up the bulk of the Medicaid expenditure.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it correct that there's 20% or something like that that goes to the general fund from these monies, and if so, why?
So I-185 was structured very similarly to the 2004 tobacco tax initiative that passed Montana overwhelmingly. So we almost took the same categories. We just expanded some of the language under the designated portions to add veteran suicide, so that money that was designated for veterans' homes, which was not getting spent and getting swept over to the general fund every year, can now be used for veteran suicide prevention funds and gives more space to that. But you're right. $36 million approximately is designated into these state special revenue accounts that have some definitions of how the money should be appropriated by the legislature. They also have the power to change that in times of crisis. And then $38 million goes into the general fund. And I have to tell you, if LR 128 doesn't pass, was it 128? Yes, LR 128 doesn't pass and we have other holes in our system, we cratered our mental health system. We cratered it. Mm-hmm. We lost mental health care in numerous communities. We lost OPA offices. And if we had passed tobacco tax initiative, the harm would not have been as deep. We need the money in the general fund too.
Okay. There's a hand over here.
Is the funds that you are gained by 185, are they intended to pay all of the services that are listed on this, all of the Medicaid, all of the veterans, or do they just contribute to those funds?
So I-185's, the designated funds are for the health initiative. It's to really sort of seed the project. So we never wanted to come back into 2019 and have the battle over the sunset and have legislators say, A, we can't raise any taxes, and B, we don't have any money. So we wanted to bring the money to the table that covered the gap between what traditional Medicaid used to cost, that $40 million, and what the forecast was, which is $60 million. So that $26 million should cover the gap. Not even talking about the revenue piece. And then I would love it if the legislature appropriated even more funding for veteran services or home and community-based waiver services so people can stay in their homes. They haven't done it. They haven't done it in a way that is stuck. This sticks, right? It puts it in the state special revenue accounts. It puts definitions on how the money should be appropriated. I'm not saying it's 100% perfect because the legislature at the end of the day gets to look at all statutes, but it tells the legislature, as Dr. Olszewski said, when you guys speak, we listen. And that's what we wanted to do with I-185.
When the ads say that the money raised is not enough for veterans.
Okay. So what you're saying is, the ads say that that there's still a gap. That's what the funds say. That's what the ads say, right? So here's the deal. I think the Citizens Initiative was well designed because as a people, you can't appropriate money. Okay, our Constitution will not be only. The only branch of the government that can appropriate money is the legislative branch. And here's the kicker, is that Medicaid expansion, because they knew that back in 15, it was made a statutory fund. And as a result, it, like I said, it's a vacuum and a blank check on the general fund. It takes money directly from the general fund, and we have no, if the money's spent, it has to leave. The money puts it back in the general fund, because that way it can go to Medicaid expansion. But does it cover it or doesn't it cover it? As someone who follows the appropriations, who's trying to find money, because it doesn't. And here's our problem. In government, we overpromise and we underdeliver.
Okay, well, a minute apiece. Who's first?
Go ahead.
I ruined Stacy's day. And I don't mean to. Stacy does an excellent job. She's an advocate for primary care for everywhere. Urban care, rural care, frontier care. She does an excellent job. She's here for the same passion of what she wants. She wants a healthy Montana. And she's working hard on the system. Her passion is fantastic. And we all should have it, right? I'm a doctor, I want smoking to go away. I don't want any of my kids smoking. I fight my parents, I fought them, mostly, 500%. But here's the fact, this is very complex. And it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. There's a lot of good. I love the sheep's clothing. I'm all for it. All for it. But nobody's hands are pure on this situation. You got big tobacco over here, it's big money for them. And you got hospitals over here, it's big money for them. They're the two people that are putting in the money. Nobody else has got any money in the game. Follow the money.
Mm-hmm. Stacy?
At the end of the day, I-185 is a tobacco tax initiative. It's to reduce tobacco consumption and stop kids from starting. The piece that's the wolf in sheep clothing, according to the senator, the legislature gets to look at January of 2019, and that is their job. 150 people get to go in and look at the policy around Medicaid expansion and make the tweaks that they can work across the aisles and do that. Think about the people in your life who've been affected by tobacco. In 1996, Oregon passed Measure 44. It raised the tobacco tax, and my dad quit smoking. He's dying from lung disease now, but I got 20 years for him. This is real for people. I'm here for the tobacco tax. This is important. People are dying. 1,600 people a year. We do more to try to prevent opioid deaths
83 a year than we're doing to prevent tobacco deaths in the state. We're already paying for the health care. Let's give all the tools in the tool chest to prevent tobacco use.
Okay, we're moving on. So there's lots of energy to be had here. I just want to remind you that on the 17th of October, there'll be a candidate forum here for Senate races 32 and 34 and the County Commission. On the 23rd, at the Belgrade Library at 7 o'clock, House races 64, 67, and 68. And on 10/24, right back here, House races 61, 63, 65. So I hope you all come back. So now we will move to the last, the mining initiative. And the pro may speak first.
Thank you. My name is Tom Reed. I work for Trout Unlimited, and Trout Unlimited is 100% behind I-186. And I want to say four words here. New hard rock mines. So if you're working in a mine right now and you have a good job, you don't have to worry about 186. You're going to continue to have that job. What the state of Montana does not have is a way to deny a permit to a mine that could pollute forever. So let me say that again. The state of Montana does not have a way to deny a permit to a mine that could pollute forever. That's pretty huge for us. What we are about here is passing an initiative that gives the authority to the state to say, you know what, this mine looks like it's in pretty risky terrain. It looks like it's going to pollute acid mine drainage for perpetuity. We're going to deny this permit. It's choosing the resource of water over the resource that's in the ground. Water is a resource, just like copper. This is something that is not being reinvented. We're not inventing the wheel. This has been done in New Mexico. New Mexico right now has the second largest copper industry in the state, the second largest. It is the miners in the state of New Mexico have found a way to live with what we're trying to do in the state of Montana with acid mine drainage. There's 2,500 miles of acid mine drainage in the state of Montana right now. Those are from historic mines, certainly, but they're also from mines that have been closed up, and the bond has been forfeited, and the taxpayers have been left with the bag. Let me read you some quick figures here. The Zorba-Landusky mine ceased operation in 1998. $27.5 million the taxpayers have been on the hook for cleaning that mine up because the company, a Canadian company, closed up shop, declared bankruptcy, and quit the country. We were left with the bag. $1 to $2 million every year, forever. That's perpetuity. That's what we're trying to do with this thing. That's in the Little Rocky Mountains. The Beale mine, $13.7 million. So far, another 39 million needed. The Basin Creek mine, 5 million. And this goes on and on and on, and it's in perpetuity. That's why we're behind this. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Rhonda Wiggers. I'm from Great Traveled up here from Great Falls, down here from Great Falls. I've been working with the Mining Association on special projects for about 16 years now, and have worked with them on increasing the regulations on tailings ponds, as well as worked on a couple of different initiatives. And they asked me to come tonight and tell you the miners' perspective on this initiative, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here. I would like to start with a quote from Senator Jim Keene at DEQ. He said, "This isn't about water. This is about stopping new mines in the state of Montana." So to address the issues you've heard already, he's not wrong. The taxpayers of Montana have paid those fees. What he forgot to tell you is the taxpayer he is referring to are the mines themselves. The mines themselves and natural resources pay into the funds, the RIT funds, the metal funds that pay for that cleanup. Not only do they pay into those taxes, but the mines themselves are also cleaning up old mines. Montana Resources is working with state to clean up the Parrot tailings in Butte.
the mine at Golden Sunlight takes the tailings from all over the state as they're being cleaned up and runs them through their processing plant to help clean up those projects. New mining technology is what is required from DEQ. They absolutely have the right to deny any mine that is not going to, that is going to leave you dirty water. It is the law. It's the federal law and the state law. We meet federal clean water standards to discharge. We meet the state non-DEG requirements to discharge. Those would be, what it basically says is anything you take out, you have to put back in as clean or cleaner. Were those the laws 30 years ago? No, they were not. Those are the mines he's referring to. The legislature and the federal government have both addressed those. The bonding issue he talks about in 2005 and in 1995 and again in 2005, the Montana legislature rewrote the bonding laws for the state of Montana. So now your bond is not only looked at yearly, but completely reassessed every 5 years. Reclamation is required while you're working through the mines. Excuse me. And your bond has to cover if you were to go bankrupt, and you cannot be self-bonded in the state of Montana, as other states, your bond must require enough in bonding for the state to come in, completely operate your mine, and then close that mine down properly. What this initiative does, doesn't change the water discharge, doesn't change the bonding. It adds a few key words that are completely undefined. The legislative legal services told them they were undefined, and it will do nothing but cause perpetual litigation. And that is the concern of all the mining companies, including those operating, because they too hope to expand and stay in business as they just go through their work through their ore body. And they are very concerned because other portions of the law require a major expansion to have a full new permit. Yes, ma'am, in the back.
What are the three undefined words?
What are the three undefined words?
Perpetual treatment, for one. Perpetual is not defined as in, is it 200 years, is it 20 days, is it, how long after closing is perpetual? And it's not defined whether it's passive. Down in Dillon area, the top plants, we use wetlands that they have created for treatment. And those are considered perpetual treatment. Those wetlands will stay long after the talc cleanser, the talc mining is gone. But we don't know whether it's passive or mechanical for that. The other one is, although it's used a lot, is clear and convincing evidence. You like to hear it on law and order, and it's used in criminal law, not generally in this area, because clear and convincing is a bar that's anywhere from a little more than preponderance, which is 50%, to beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what we use to convict someone of murder, which is 100%. Okay, hang on. My 15 seconds came up. I'll tell you the other one later.
let me remember those four words. New hard rock mines. The top mine is on a hard rock mine. So let's just get to, that is government 101. The definitions, that's what, you pass a law. We heard the senator over here talk about rulemaking and definitions and saying that is absolutely the charge of the legislature. They will do that, and also the governing body like the DEQ. That is part and parcel of what they do. The clear and convincing evidence, that is a medium standard, and it's used everywhere. It's used in the DNRC right now. I personally think that clean water is worth a medium standard.
Yes, I think. Can you remind us of a number of and the names of the mines in Montana that are declared bankruptcy and left the mess that we have had to clean up in the last 20 years?
Sure. The primary one is Pegasus Gold. Yeah, the primary one is Pegasus Gold. The other ones, that's the main bad actor, and that's actually the bad actor that the government has gone after too, the CEO of that company.
So Pegasus did declare bankruptcy more than 20 years ago and prior to these laws being put into place to protect that. That's what these laws responded to. In the statute, Montana law defines hard rock mining as palladium, gold, silver, copper, talc, garnet, gemstones, and cement. All of those plants will be affected by this law because it is in the Hard Rock Mining Statute. And that is a section of law that pertains to all of those. So they will be affected by this statute. The bankruptcy was more than 20 years ago, it was Pegasus.
I don't care if it's 20 years ago or not.
Please stop. Questions? Yes, sir.
It sounds like you were denying that the taxpayers are actually on the hook for cleaning up these legacy mines.
The legacy mines have been cleaned up with money that is paid for through natural resource industries. Whether it's coal, the gold mines, your oil and gas funds, your RIT money, your metal mines money, those are the funds that he talked about being statutorily appropriated. As those taxes are collected, then they're placed into those funds that are then used through the legislature and given to DEQ to then clean up those mines. So those are there. In the case of the Dusky Mine, there is about $300,000 out of that whole number that the commissioners from Phillips County came and asked for some water money. And the water money came from a different fund that actually is done on water taxation. And that $300,000 and some odd change went to use some water up there because the Phillips County commissioners asked for some extra money. Other than that, it has all been metal natural resource taxes that have paid all that cleanup.
So actually, what the fund she's referring to, the industry has not paid since the early 2000s. So that money actually can go to universities, it can go to schools, it can go to stream restoration. But yeah, we're using quite a bit of it. Now, I think my opponent there wants to deny that this land, these mines aren't on federal land, and the federal taxes have to pay for them. Beale Mountain, where it's on Forest Service lands, that's federal taxes. I pay federal taxes. I'm a Montana taxpayer as well. So it does, it absolutely is. If you pay taxes, you should vote for this thing.
Yes, in the very back.
So what will the effects be if the mines are shut down in 3 or 4 years, if DEQ instead of what? Can you guarantee that they will not be shut down? What are the numbers for the economy to do?
Did you hear the question?
Can you guarantee that they will not be shut
down? It's in the ballot language. It says that this does not apply to, it is absolutely in the ballot language. I encourage everyone to read the ballot language. We designed this specifically to not go after any operation. Just like in the 90s, where it was designed specifically the cyanide heat leach ban to not shut down Golden Sunlight. Golden Sunlight, since that time, has gone through many, many revisions and expansions. It's actually in the ballot language. It says it does not apply to operations that are in place before November 6th. It's only new, any mine after November 6th. Now, I do want to say one more thing. We're almost out of time. Okay. There are mines right now that are operating, they're totally operated, with no problem at all. The Stillwater mine is one we cite. The Twine mine, which closed, would not be denied a permit at all under this. We also a proposed mine I can talk about too.
Okay, Miranda.
So the economic benefits of this to the state of Montana are 12,300 people who currently make their living in mining in the state of Montana. You guys have a huge amount of that money in this community because of the mines that are just over the hill and down at Dillon and Whitehall. And even some of them coming over from Stillwater. It's also $2.7 billion in economic input, $1.1 billion in income that's paid right now from those mines, and $200 million in tax revenue. That comes from the BDR study, if you take a look at it. And I guess I'm gonna, being a Montana farm girl who's been here her whole life and worked on that initiative, I want you to know they told you Golden Sunlight wasn't included. It was. The legislature came back and rewrote it and saved Golden Sunlight. 32 companies pulled out of the state of Montana who were looking to explore exploration companies since that initiative was passed. It absolutely did affect them, and their first draft shut all the mines down immediately. When they discovered that, they were
Can I finish that sentence so they don't get in trouble if they go on that? Because I don't want to leave them with that. When the governor and the Senator Tester discussed that with them and it was looked at, they compromised and put in the new mine language. The catch is, the section that's not in the ballot language says, any existing mine, when asking for a major expansion, must follow the new mine regular permitting process. So they're exempting it in one, but in another section,
that's a long sentence. That's going
to
be a long sentence.
Let me read this. Amendments to existing mine permits permitted prior to November 6, 2018 are not subject to denial under this initiative.
Okay. Now, everybody gets 1 minute. Who wants to be first?
I should go first because you got first. Sure. So I should let you go last to get to it, but that's the way it works. I asked today as well. Hard rock mining isn't what we did 30 years ago. 30 years ago, you wanted to think about your cell phone. We didn't have one. The vet did. My doctors did. I lived up in a little town. We didn't have a doctor. The vet was the only one who had one. It was picked up. And when someone called the vet, it rang up and the horn honked up down the street. When we played Atari games or video games, we played an Atari that had Pong game back and forth on our television. That was it. We have moved forward. Mining, all industry has moved forward with technology. And the laws require at DEQ that we use best available technology. They used best available technology 20 years ago and 40 years ago as well. It's just that we do have the ability to test for asteroid drainage now. They have the ability now to bond for that. Mining is a very important part of Montana's economic structure. We are very afraid that this initiative is designed to litigate all new mines and keeping our existing mines open at a cost of over $200 million in tax revenue to the state of Montana.
Okay, Tom?
We like mining. We don't like pollution. That's in essence. And frankly, you know what? I think you can evolve. All we're doing is ask you to prove it.
Okay.
I want to say thank you to all of you, especially the speakers who come from all over the state to come and talk to us.
That's it for the second segment of the Ballot Initiative Forum, which discussed I-185 and I-186. This forum was held Wednesday, September 26, 2018, and was co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters, Bozeman Business and Professional Women, and the Bozeman Public Library. Please stay tuned to KGVM for more coverage of the 2018 elections.